ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. All right. I say this every show, but I am so excited. Everyone knows that I've been looking for the appropriate Bitcoin expert to come join us, somebody who is articulate, but most important, somebody who actually does the work. We talk about this all the time. That's why we have homicide detectives like Dale Lumberg on our show, or our lawyers on our show, the whole slew of them that we've had that actually have done the job or are doing the job and join us. No one wants to hear from, at least it's my opinion, you don't want to hear from some pundit who reads about it and has some academic background, but has never done the work, never put the case together, never worked in Bitcoin. So we have that here today. Listen, I want to give him the proper introduction. So let me go over a few details about our host, or about our guest, Averian Vargas. I love his opening statement that he has on his Juris Pro. So Juris Pro is the location where if you're looking for an amazing expert witness on any subject, this is where the attorneys look, federally, statewide, locally. This is the website they use. So it's an important website. And he is on there. And that was one of the most important things that I always look at is, are the experts? And I challenge you all to do that. When you're listening to somebody on television give their opinion on whatever the subject may be, are they in Juris Pro? Have they, has a court of law, have judges identified them as experts, and have they been used in this capacity? It's really important because a lot of people may say they're experts. Have they been found to be experts by the court? I love his opening. He says, I'm not here to read your documents and guess what happened. I know what happened because I've done it myself hundreds of times. That's the kind of guest we want on here. Somebody who has what I call time behind the tiller because they've worked in Bitcoin in this case. They've transferred it. I want to tell you some of the things he does currently. Mr. Vargas is the director of operations and infrastructure at Easy Blockchain, and he's going to explain blockchains to us. I know I've explained it in layman's terms, but we're going to have a true expert on to explain it. A Chicago-based cryptocurrency hosting company managing Bitcoin mining infrastructure across multiple U.S. facilities. He coordinates, organizes, and oversees all facility operations, existing infrastructure, and networks, personally responsible for implementing Easy Blockchain's, he's going to have to explain this to us, SB3000 container deployments, and driving Bitcoin hashtag uptime to well over 95% with sustained drive and reliability. All right. He'll explain all that to us because that lost me as well. So I know some of you may be lost unless you are a cryptocurrency Bitcoin expert. He has 15 years in the Bitcoin data centers, 60 MW capacity managed. We're going to ask him about that. 97% BitTag hashing uptime, we're going to talk to him about that, and 21K servers managed. It just doesn't get better than that. Anyone can understand from a distance, but are you actually managing and involved in Bitcoin? And most importantly for us, how can Bitcoin, the Bitcoin chain, the Bitcoin address that was given to two different outlets locally plus TMZ that Harvey Levin has talked about so often, how could a deposit. And if it's withdrawn, we already know a deposit went in. It was $300, but I guess that was just to see if it worked. How can a potential withdrawal, in other words, if the pot is sweetened enough, how could that lead to identifying who the abductors were? Okay, without further ado, I know that was a long introduction, but he deserved it. How are you doing, sir? Thank you so much for joining us. Uh-oh, we can't hear you. Are you on mute?
There you go.
There we go.
Thank you, Jen, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So please start us off with just rudimentary. What is Bitcoin? How does it fit? What is cryptocurrency? I know that's the overarching, but can you just explain to us as if we're in first grade how this all works and why it came into being?
Absolutely. And that's exactly how I like to learn. It's jelly at the bottom shelf. I think it was Einstein who said, if you can't explain it simply enough, you just don't know it. So what is Bitcoin? Well, let's start with what is money? Because in essence, Bitcoin is looking to replace money one day. And it's doing a good job at it, by the way. Well, if you remember way back when we were very, very young, if you wanted a cow and I had some sheep, we would trade, we would barter. You had something of value, I had something of value. There's something called the coincident of wants. So if you and I coincide with our wants, we could say, okay, same value, let's trade them. From then, somebody in China decided to use coins. And they developed these gold coins, silver coins, different values of rare earth that had value to people. And at first people says, well, that's not a cow. I want the animal. I don't want this piece of coin. But then after a while I was adopted. And by the way, there were detractors that said, I don't want the coin. I want the actual physical item. We moved on to coins. And then after that, we moved on to bills. And we had the same exact adoption issue. People said, I don't want the bill. It could be ripped up. The bill can be, what if it gets wet? What if it gets lost? That was overcome, so we started using bills. Then just a few years ago, I remember when I was a kid, I saw a video in the 1980s, I think it was, when debit cards came out and they started to be used. And a lot of the older folks, and by older, I mean 60s, 70s, 80s, they said, not you, come on. They said, oh, I don't trust that. I want to see the real cash. That debit card can be stolen. What if somebody steals my PIN, right? And so now we're on to electric money or media that's out there in the ether. We don't know exactly what it is or where it's at or what's a blockchain or what's the cloud. Well, it's similar to the credit card or the debit card. a long time ago, we realized that we don't control our money. If you give it to the bank controls the money. I went to the bank, a couple of years ago, I went to go buy a car and it was a Saturday. I looked at the car, I said, okay, I'll take it. And the guy wanted like $2,000. I forget what he wanted, not too much money. And so I pulled everything I could from the ATM. I didn't think I was gonna buy the car, so I didn't take the cash with me. So I called the bank like I've called them before. And I've said, can you raise my available funds that I can pull out of the ATM? Why? Oh, I'm going to buy a car. What kind of car? Does it matter? I'm going to buy a car. It says, no, you need to tell us the make and model, the year, how many miles it has. They gave me this long list of requirements so they can write it down and they can approve whether or not I was going to pull my money out. That's what the banks can do. A little while ago, a lot of credit card companies said, oh, we don't want the population to buy this certain item. And so people were not allowed to go to certain stores and buy certain items. That's the control of the ledger. So long story short, we needed to develop a system that we control, or that is not controlled by a central government or it's not controlled by a bank. So Bitcoin was developed. Bitcoin was developed by an obscure anonymous man called, he called himself Satoshi Nakamoto. That's a made up name. There's a lot of ideas of who this man was. We don't know exactly who he was. He developed this technology. The technology is automated. No one person has control. We've got a couple of graphics that I think we'll bring up in a little bit, not just yet, on exactly how the technology works. Long story short, Bitcoin is the ability for you to keep your money, keep it safe. The ledger isn't held by a bank, by a government, by anybody else. It's held by an automated system that is consistently checking itself to make sure that it's correct. There's no double spending. I can't send you one Bitcoin and the same exact Bitcoin. I'm tricking the system because I'm going fast enough or slow enough to then send the same Bitcoin somewhere else. That's not the way that it works. By design, it has checks and balances to ensure that nothing funny goes around and the money gets sent and received correctly. Very inexpensive rate, by the way. So that's a little bit of an explanation, trying to explain what is Bitcoin, the replacement of money. It's the evolution of money. It's the next step of money. The last thing I'll say about Bitcoin is our grandchildren are never going to touch real currency. Unless it's some kind of collector's items, they will only use digital transactions such as Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency.
That is so interesting to me because you're right. When you look at the evolution of money, I can just imagine somebody saying, I want a cow. I don't want a silver coin. And like you said, the passage then of dollar bills, people must have been thinking people were crazy. You're going to give me a piece of paper and that's really going to mean something. And then as you talked about the whole debit card, I remember thinking, and a lot of people thought, oh my gosh, that's going to be traced. It's, you know, they're going to know the government's going to be all in my business. They're going to know all my transactions, which is probably all true. And we don't want any part of that, but look at what we're doing. And then credit cards. And now it's seemingly almost impossible to use cash because you do everything over the phone. And so, you know, I personally have been so afraid of anything to do with cryptocurrency. Can you talk about the overarching cryptocurrency? And was Bitcoin the first one? Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Bitcoin was the first well-established, solid, secure method that was used. Bitcoin was started to replace money. At a certain point, everybody tells the story about the first Bitcoin purchase. They kind of ridicule the guy who made the purchase. So what happened? In the user nets, in the forums, a man said, I want a pizza. Who can buy me a pizza? I will give you 10,000 Bitcoins. This was, don't exactly remember, about 7-8 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. Somebody across the country said, I'll do it. Give me the 10,000 Bitcoin and I will get you your pizza. So he calls up a pizza place very near this man's home. And he says, yeah, give me a delivery to this guy. Give him these two pizzas. So the guy gave up the 10,000 Bitcoin for two pizzas. So nowadays people will say, oh, that's the most expensive pizza in the world. I can't believe he did that. What a fool. I very much disagree with that. We needed that first step. Okay. That Bitcoin was worth the $20, $30 spent on pizza at that time. People will say 10,000 Bitcoin, that's a $1 billion pizza at today's money. Well, we can say that about inflation. We could say that about 1980s money. That's the wrong way to look at it. The correct way to look at it is he took the first step to make Bitcoin transactional. That man is a hero. I'm grateful to him because nowadays Bitcoin's worth a heck of a lot of money. Nowadays, people understand that if I want to make a payment, I want to buy something, let's say I want to buy something in Brazil. I can very easily, very inexpensively send them Bitcoin. Okay. Today, the value of Bitcoin is about $74,000 as of this morning. So if I want to make a transaction, I don't have to go through the banks, through their process, through their KYC or know your customer. I can very easily send Bitcoin somewhat anonymously. That's another beautiful part of Bitcoin. It can be anonymous. Now, when it comes to criminal activities, there are ways to overcome that. But to answer your question, it's an increasingly growing method that we are going to see in the future, one way or the other, money is going digital. Bitcoin is the biggest one. And in my opinion, it will remain the biggest one, at least for my lifetime.
Wow. It's amazing to me, the people who have the insight. When I think of all the people who, after that pizza purchase, got involved in Bitcoin, personal friends of mine that said, Jen, you got to get involved in this Bitcoin thing. And I said, no way, I'm afraid of it. I don't want it to mean nothing. And we're going to go into that a little bit with the scams that go on. But I want to talk about how today's Bitcoin, you said, is worth right now $74,000 is one Bitcoin. How do you actually make it into money? How do you make it transactional?
Okay, that's a very, very good question. So Bitcoin by design has a limited amount of Bitcoin. By design, Bitcoin has will only ever have 21 million of them. Out of those 21 million, there's already several million that are lost to the ether that we know for a fact are not in the system anymore. USD, we can print more. We can print more today. In fact, we've been doing that. Money has lost its value. Bitcoin will never have more than 21 million. So how does it get its transactions? How do we assign it value? If you think of it like a stock, you're going to be the closest that in the thought process than anybody around you. It's a stock. Why do we assign AT&T or Verizon or Google or Microsoft a specific value? Because people that are in it said, I'm going to buy it at 300. I'm going to buy it at whatever the cost it is. When bad news happens, it goes down. When good news happens, it goes up. Same exact with Bitcoin. There was a time when very few people cared about Bitcoin, and you can buy 10,000 Bitcoin for the price of a couple of pizzas. Well, as more people started to demand it, the price went up. It's the regular capitalism of supply and demand. And then at the end of the day, we're going to see that more people are going to put value in it. It's more transactional now than ever. If you go to I forget the name of the hamburger place all of a sudden. They're accepting Bitcoin now. You can literally buy a piece of hamburger for just a few decimals of Bitcoin. It's becoming transactional. I just came back from Mexico. I found a couple of places that accept Bitcoin. Absolutely phenomenal how worldwide it's being accepted. It has value because we give it value. We say we're willing to pay $74,000 for one Bitcoin. And by the way, you don't have to buy one Bitcoin. You could buy a fraction of it, just like you can buy a fraction of stocks. You don't have to buy a whole Tesla stock or a whole Apple stock. That's expensive. You have $1,000 laying around, nothing to do with. Okay, maybe I'll buy one stock of Apple. But if I have $300, I can put it in the system. I can see it grow over the next 2 or 3 years. And for doing absolutely nothing in 5 years, I may have $400. I may have $200, depending on what happens with the company. That's how we value Bitcoin. And again, that's the simplest way I think I can explain it. Think of it as a stock. Did I answer your question, Jen?
Well, this is what I want to know. Just say on a lark, I decide to buy 1/10 of a Bitcoin. I decide to do it. So I purchase this Bitcoin, which I want to know how to do that. And then I have this Bitcoin and now I want to take a vacation. So can I use it to buy a vacation?
Okay. So I want to buy Bitcoin. What do I do? Just like when you want to buy stock, same exact process and procedure. We want to find an exchange. Fidelity, for example, if I want to buy stock, that's just one example. Name your favorite exchange. You call them up, you say, I want an account. What are they going to do? They're going to say, okay, Jen, give me all of your information, your social security number, your address, your bank account number. Give me all of your information, just like when you start a bank account. Okay? You start the account with this exchange. There are big ones. Coinbase is a big one. Gemini is a big one. There's a bunch of exchanges, just like there is for stock purchases. So you call them, you open an account with them. Nowadays, you can download an app, open an account. Then we do what's called a KYC, know your customer. Why do they have to know my social security number? Why do they have to know my address? They're going to ask you for a picture ID. You have to take a picture of the front and back of your license, passport, whatever federal ID that you have. Well, they do that for fraud purposes. They do that so in case you kidnap somebody and you get some money in your wallet, it becomes a lot easier nowadays to trace that Bitcoin back to you because the exchanges are going to work with the government or else they can't exist or else the government won't allow them to buy and sell Bitcoin to the public, to you and I. So today we open up an account with an exchange. We send them cash through a wire transfer, through a credit card, a debit card, whatever they accept. And then they say, okay, Jen, you've got $1,000. What do you want to do with this? And with your app on the phone, sometimes you can call them, sometimes you can chat with them. But usually you use the app and you say, I want $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. Now, they're going to give you $990 worth of Bitcoin because they have a transaction fee that they charge. That's how they make the money. That's how you and I are able to use these exchanges. So then you get $990 worth of Bitcoin. It's put in a wallet, and then you can see it grow. You can see it fall, depending on what it's doing. But at the end of the day, I want to spend it or I want to save it. That's the next question. A lot of people use it as an investment. Is it going up or down? Because it's not very quick liquid, not yet. The reason that people buy Bitcoin is to watch it grow. Now, if you bought Bitcoin a few months ago, it was 120,000. Today's at 74,000. So worst thing you can do is sell your Bitcoin. Bitcoin will eventually go back up. Bitcoin has a cycle. The cycle, it's called a four-year cycle. If you look at the chart of the price of Bitcoin, you will see that it's got this repeatable process where it goes up and down. We're currently at the lower levels of this cycle, which tells us that in the next few months, it's going to explode. By the way, if you look at the charts for stocks, they have very similar cycles as well, where unless a company makes a huge misstep, unless they're working on something illegal, some kind of fraud or scam, companies generally go up and down, but end up higher for their value. Bitcoin has the same thing. It's repeatable. It's historical. So that's the reason most people buy Bitcoin. Now, once we see a stability and that cycle flattens out, which I believe it will soon, you're going to start seeing a lot more transactions. Today, we can do transactions. I can go into Steak and Shake. I can buy hamburgers. I can buy a meal with by the way, they say that when they get Bitcoin, they save it because they understand right now we're at a low. They're going to be pulling it out later when it's a lot higher. Now, we have multiple methods that we can make our Bitcoin transactional. Usually, the wisest thing to do is to buy Bitcoin from an exchange. So Coinbase is probably the biggest one out there. That's why I keep calling it out. There's multiple. You buy it at Coinbase. The beauty with Bitcoin is instead of going to the bank, putting money in the bank and then allowing the bank ledger to hold your money, allowing the bank ledger to control your money. With Bitcoin, I can put it in a wallet that I hold. Okay. A digital wallet is nothing more than a computer program. It's either online or I have it physically with me. Okay. This wallet will hold the algorithm, will hold the Bitcoin. It's secure. It's layered by the Bitcoin security. I can hold my money personally, and they will not leave me unless I know a very complicated set of codes and passwords. Now, there's multiple wallets. There's hundreds of different wallets. Some wallets are made to be transactional. What does that mean? That means I could put $100 worth of Bitcoin in these specific wallets. I've done it myself. I have one myself. I was at a Bitcoin event, and the man that was giving the speech wrote a book on Bitcoin. And he signed it, and I wanted to give it as a gift to one of my bosses. My boss admired him, and I said, oh, I'm going to get him that book. So I went up to him, and he says, do you have Lightning? I have Lightning. What's Lightning? Lightning is a type of wallet, a type of transaction. I sign up. I install the app. I transfer from my exchange or from my other wallet into this wallet. And then I can easily tap his phone and transfer. I transfer $60 to him, and he got paid for it. That's how easy it is to transfer Bitcoin, depending on the type of wallet that you have. It's complicated by design, but at the same time, it's easy by design. If you want to pay for something with Bitcoin, you'll hold it in a transactional wallet. If you want to save money, I've got what they call a cold storage wallet, where in order for me to save money, I've got to put in a 21-digit code, and then I have to put in a second code that is far more complicated. I think it's got like 120 different characters. Oh. By design, it's made very difficult for me to pull money out. And I hide this wallet where nobody knows. I'm not even going to tell you. And that's where the majority of my Bitcoin is.
So that is to watch it go up, and then hopefully at the end you end up with this gigantic nest egg, because you look down the road in 2 years and a Bitcoin is 200,000 instead of the 74 you bought it with today. Is that the premise?
Yeah, that's the premise. And the thought is that Bitcoin is going to go to 1 million within 5 years.
Wow. Okay. I've got some notes. I've got some things. I've got some things in chat I want to address. I want to start with a small thing in chat, and then I want to say a blow-up question that directly relates to Nancy Guthrie. And believe me, we're going to get dead on the Nancy Guthrie, but I'm hoping this is helpful for you in the audience. I know for me, this is so helpful, even though you and I had a long conversation prior to this show, so I could kind of get even a better understanding. And then, of course, I studied a couple of FBI cases where they solved the Bitcoin. They got to the end user in 2025 was one of the cases. And that was a murder case, just to show that it can happen. It's not like this is pie in the sky, but we're going to talk about that. But one of the things somebody pointed out was, wait a minute. And I want to make it clear, this isn't a Bitcoin commercial. This isn't trying to get anybody to buy Bitcoin. He's not trying to do that. He's trying to get everybody to understand the premise surrounding Bitcoin. Somebody shouted out and said, hey, listen, I've pulled larger transactions out. I got to tell you, I don't even use an ATM. I've never used an ATM. I don't have an ATM card, and I don't have a debit card. That's just me personally. But I know what you mean when you go to the bank. If you want to exceed a particular limit, it's very difficult. One time, this was because of terrible storm situations happening, and we wanted to have a lot of cash money here. So both of us, my husband and I, each took $10,000 out. It was an act of God. You would have thought they didn't even have $10,000 in the bank. It was unbelievable, the questions. And I understand that it depends on the teller you get. It depends on the person you called to get the limit extended from 500 to 2,000 that you can have these picky people in. Some people might say, here you go. And then other people, because they're looking out for your money. At the end of the day, these tellers and the people you contact on the other end are so worried about fraud, because at the end of the day, for instance, with a credit card, you're not caught holding the bag. The bank is caught holding the bag. So that's the reason I know for a fact that tellers and people in charge of banking are much more in your business trying to see if it's legitimate or not. Not that they care about the car, but they want you to explain so they can document why in the heck they allowed somebody over the phone, even though you had the credentials, to take out 2,000 instead of 500, so they're not caught holding the bag. I just wanted to address that really quickly. This isn't a Bitcoin commercial. This is an understanding of Bitcoin so that we can see if the Bitcoin account that was given on the first two ransom notes, and then even on the later ransom notes to catch a bunch of individuals who are extorting this family, if that could be used. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Secondarily, I wanted to talk about something you said at the very beginning when I asked you, how can I set up a Bitcoin account? And it, you described it much like a bank. I have to give them, you know, everything about me. If that's the case, how do you do it surreptitiously or anonymously, like has obviously been done in this case? Because the FBI, after I think we're on day 75, how in the world don't they have who the Bitcoin wallet belongs to? Bring us home with that.
Absolutely. Now, if you and I want to buy some Bitcoin, we go through the legal way. We go through the correct way, which is what I described. Bitcoin does have an element of anonymity. We can create any wallet at any time. There are methods where I can go to a website or go to a program, download a program, use Bitcoin nodes, and create a wallet out of thin air. I have that wallet. Now I can receive Bitcoin. Okay. That's maybe the second way to get Bitcoin. The third way, by the way, and allow me to mention this, third way to create Bitcoin, to have Bitcoin. Give you foundation. I probably should have given you at the very beginning. So what we do here is we allow you to create Bitcoin. How do you do that? You can buy your own Bitcoin creation machine. They vary in price. They have them as cheap as a couple hundred dollars. They have them as expensive as $4,000 or $5,000. I can buy a machine whose sole purpose is to produce the Bitcoin. What Easy Blockchain here does is we will take that machine, put it in a facility, turn the power on, put it on the internet, and then you get the Bitcoin. You say, well, what do you get out of it? We resell power. We're, in essence, we're a power reselling facility. Well, why can't I just do that at home? Go for it. But your home prices are going to be 4 or 5 times more expensive than what you can get them in a facility like ours. That's why we exist. We're called a hosting facility. So you can buy a machine. The machine will pay for itself in a few months. And then you pay for the electricity. The lifetime of the machine will get you 2 times, 3 times the Bitcoin, depending on the machine that you purchase. You can buy a used one and make a little bit of Bitcoin. You can buy a brand new one and make a lot more. That's what we do. That's another way for people to get Bitcoin. It's worth it. But the only problem there is you have to have the capital for the investment. Okay. That's probably the first way. By the way, that's how Bitcoin got started. What you call mining for Bitcoin.
Okay. I'm sorry. I got to interrupt. And I'm glad I warned you that I would probably interrupt.
Sure.
I am totally lost. And I know you're explaining to us what likely happened in Nancy Guthrie's case, what likely, why they're hidden. But this is way beyond. You started out telling us that there's only, did you say 21 million Bitcoin? How many Bitcoins are there?
There will only be produced 21 million.
Okay.
There, yes, that's total. That's when all the computers have finished producing the Bitcoin. Okay. These computers that I just talked about that you and I can buy, we put them on the network and they literally work to produce this Bitcoin.
Work to produce a Bitcoin. What? How does?
Well, I think we have a graphic. Can we bring it up? Is that okay?
Yeah. No, I'd love to. Please.
Absolutely.
Explain this to you because I'm freaked out right now. It's like
absolutely. So this is the problem with Bitcoin, that the technology is so new. It's very hard for us to grasp it and understand it. This is what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is three major components. The ASICs you see on the left, the nodes on the right, the wallets at the bottom. Okay. So all of them together produce Bitcoin. We know what a wallet is. A wallet is the system where you and I can keep our Bitcoin. That's the easiest to understand. It's an application on my phone, on the computer. And if I tell it transfer one Bitcoin to my wallet, here's my long, complicated looking wallet address. Think of it like a phone number. Then it sits in there until I tell it to transfer out. The nodes. Let's talk about the nodes for a second. The nodes are computers. We call them nodes. Okay. They're computers like the laptops that you and I are using right now. Like the laptops we use to surf on Facebook or on Instagram. They're computers. What these computers do is they download every single transaction from the very beginning of the Bitcoin network. The very first time somebody sends one Bitcoin to somebody else, it's all tracked, every bit of it, and it's public. You can go into the internet and download the Bitcoin block. It's called a blockchain. And that's another problem with computer people, whether it's Bitcoin or anything else. They love to use complicated words. The blockchain is a ledger. You and I know what a ledger is. It gives you the in and out of the money. Okay. But we in Bitcoin call it blockchain because we think we're smarter than everybody else. That's what the nodes do. The nodes double check all of the ledgers. They make sure, okay, Nancy sent Avron 15 Bitcoin, so we're going to take it out of her wallet. We're going to put it into his wallet. Now she has less, he has more. That's what the computers do.
Okay, so all a computer does, which you guys call nodes, all it does is say money, Bitcoins going in, Bitcoins coming out. We're keeping track. And that is called a blockchain. The movements are blockchains, right? Is that easy enough?
Correct.
Okay, perfect.
Correct.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. I'm going to interrupt you.
You're fine.
Make sure the...
Those are the two, absolutely. Those are the two easiest parts to explain. What a wallet is, the node. Okay, the node has the blockchain. It has the ledger. It has all the transactions from the beginning of time. And it has this phenomenal way to chain them together to make sure that Nancy can't go into the network and change. 3 years ago, she's going to put down that she had 100 Bitcoin. It's impossible because of the way these things are chained together. One is locked into the previous one via a long, complicated hash calculation. And I'm trying to use simple words here, arithmetic, that verifies the last one and the next one.
Okay, so really quick, a hash is strictly, and I saw that terminology, hash, hash, hash. That's strictly the accounting of it all.
Let me rephrase that a little bit. A hash is a word that describes a math problem or math resolution that basically describes the result of a request. It's a catch-all term. So we use it different places. Okay. Now let's hit on the ASICs. If you start to get into the Bitcoin world and you want to create Bitcoin, all you're going to know and understand is ASICs. What is an ASIC? ASIC is the computer that does the work to prove that the next blockchain, the next ledger is correct. ASIC is a computer that is working on a math problem to solve the next blockchain. It sounds complicated, but allow me to try to simplify it, and you're going to think it's that simple. It's that simple. The ASIC computer will create a guess or a calculation for a key. The node is waiting for that key. The ASIC was designed to say something is working in the system. It's using power. It's using calculations. It's using chips. It was designed to say something is working behind Bitcoin. It's not just empty. There's a network out there of computers that are confirming the transactions, that are confirming what the nodes are doing. And this network is billions and billions of dollars. The computers are billions and billions of, they are worth billions and billions. They are using megawatts and megawatts of electricity. It is something real. The US dollar is based on the full faith and government of the United States, which has value. But how can anybody give us a precise, exact worth of that value? The strength of the United States, great. But the US dollar is worth a lot less today than it was 10 years ago. What is Bitcoin worth? We can look at the power that is being used to generate Bitcoin. And we can say all of these computers with their valuation in the billion, with their power in the gigawatts, are powering the nodes, are confirming the nodes. Because they exist, the nodes are accurate. And because the nodes are accurate, people are not stealing. People are not double spending their Bitcoin. That node, that ledger is accurate. All you and I need to know, what's in my wallet? And behind the wallet is this intricate system that checks itself. I hope I simplified it a little bit.
Listen, it's, I think part of, look, my head's spinning. But I think I get the, I get what you're trying to get at. I'm going to dumb it down to how my brain interpreted that. And that is that Nancy Guthrie. So for everybody, the first two, because this is all about the Nancy Guthrie case. That is why we are getting in the weeds about this.
Absolutely.
So when you look at this, my question was, we know the first two letters ask for $6 million in Bitcoin, not 6 million Bitcoin, by the way. I got that clarified. It was $6 million in Bitcoin. And the first two letters, Savannah has said, those were real. In other words, those were from the abductors. Why does she think that? I can tell you why she thinks that. She thinks that because of law enforcement's reaction, what law enforcement through her victim witness coordinator and through other conversations said. We know that the government, that the FBI thought they were real, the first two, because of what they had the family do. They had, there's five different videos where Savannah Guthrie and or Savannah and the siblings have reached out to these ransom note writers, specifically those first two writers. We know that based on what Harvey Levin said, he read as part of it, he, you know, paraphrased. We know about the specifics that only somebody would know, such as, I believe, the watch being on the nightstand, what she wore, a floodlight, and there might have been a lot of other things. But basically, they believe those notes are real. I believe those first two notes are real. Although I believe they were sent after she was already deceased. And I just think it was a torturous way to continue to kind of torture this family. Why do I say that? Because if there were proof of life, if she had lived, if she could talk, they would have sent that to try to get the 6 million. So all that being said, that's why we are doing a deep dive into the Bitcoin, because they gave a very specific Bitcoin address on this. which, as our guest is saying, that can all be tracked because of the nodes, aka computer, and the wallet, aka your account, and the ASICs that's basically just keeping track of everything. I know I'm really dumbing this down, but that is where we're at. So having said that, my question was, how in the world can't, if you open up a Bitcoin account traditionally and legitimately, it could be traced, but that isn't what happened here. Obviously, this account was created in a false, fictitious, and illegitimate way so as to obstruct law enforcement figuring out who opened the account. So I ask our amazing guest, how do you do that? And that's why he brought this up. He said, listen, you can actually buy a computer that creates Bitcoin, meaning it has to be within the 21 million. Can't go over that, right?
Right.
And then you're bringing up too that these nodes, they cost all this. Like, how much is it monthly to keep my node going, to keep my computer going?
Absolutely. It depends on the computer that you buy. You can buy an inexpensive one that's going to cost you $20, $30 a month. You could buy a big one that's going to cost you a couple hundred dollars a month. You could buy 10, 20 of them. You can buy whatever number that you want within your budget for the electricity cost. And again, the newer one you buy, the more Bitcoin will come out. And at the end of the day, it's just basically what your budget is. If you only have a little bit of money, you'll only get a little bit of Bitcoin in return, but it's not going to cost you much.
Okay. So is your premise then that whoever abducted and then sent these letters asking for a Bitcoin deposit is your best educated presumption as a Bitcoin expert? If you were going to do that, if you wanted to be anonymous, would you buy this computer and have it managed? Is this the best way to maintain anonymity?
No, there's another way. I can just create a wallet with a node as opposed to an ASIC. I can create a wallet with a node. The node is just a regular computer. I can use any computer. I can download the Bitcoin network. It's an application available on the internet. Download the Bitcoin network. They also have, who is they, is Bitcoin developers, have a way where you can just out of thin air create a Bitcoin wallet that's anonymous. That's what they would do. They would either create a node or just an anonymous wallet.
So explain to us how to create an anonymous wallet.
Sure. There's two major ways. The first one is through a node. So I get a computer, brand new computer, plenty of hard drive space in it.
So sorry, I'm going to interrupt you a little bit. So I can use my Apple computer or I need a new computer. Do I need a computer that isn't traceable, you mean? Like the IP?
That's true. But that's easy to do. You can hide it behind a VPN. You can literally, if you're a bad actor, you can just go hide somewhere, open up an internet connection, and then move it somewhere else with a laptop. Look, criminals, it's been a cat and mouse game for centuries, as long as we've been alive. So if you create something, you go to Starbucks on a stolen laptop, you create a wallet, nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to understand where it came from. Because, by the way, you can do it at home because that wallet is untraceable. And again, they have apps. You search the internet, create a brand new anonymous wallet. It's an easy function that the internet does. You can get a Bitcoin node where you don't go to a place to create a wallet. They give you a wallet address. So there might be a history there. You can download the Bitcoin node, create your own wallet, throw that computer away. Now you have that wallet with that secret phrase. Creating an anonymous wallet is easy. It's quick. It's free.
Okay. So, and I've explained to the audience before how easy it is to hide your
IP address.
IP address, how easy it is. Literally, you don't even have to go to a Best Buy or buy a phone anywhere. You could get a phone that you literally pay for cash that's been discarded by somebody at Goodwill. That's what I would do. And now that's just a vessel. And from there, I download a VPN. I use an email address that's Swiss or German. You can't get those account records. I literally use a public domain such as Home Depot. I sit outside the Home Depot. Yep. I just want to explain. The reason I'm explaining this is not to give criminals ideas. They already have these ideas.
They already know.
I'm explaining it so that people understand why the FBI is having so much trouble solving this, because of this anonymity layers that are created. And so you're saying, say I do all of this, just like this is how I think the emails were sent, why they can't be traced. So they're sitting outside of a Starbucks, grabbing on that public email somewhere with a VPN, with an address.
Stolen computer.
Yeah, with an address that goes back to Proton, you know, in Switzerland, that's not going to be traceable. I mean, they're so privatized in terms of what they're going to give up. And I can now create my wallet, right?
Correct.
So all I do is literally go to a Bitcoin app wallet. You know, no more difficult than me going on to any app, TJ Maxx app, and, you know, opening up a credit card. I can create a wallet with Bitcoin. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now I have this wallet and I can make myself anybody, Batman. I don't need a social security number. I don't need anything. What do I need? Do I need anything?
You just need to receive the funds.
Okay, so I have it open now. And that's it. So let's just believe that these people did that. So, I mean, is this giving everybody, and I want to get your opinion on this. This is some pretty, pretty educated and talented folks that did this. This isn't just Joe Blow off the street. This is well calculated and some intelligent people on this deal. Do you agree with that?
Not necessarily. I mean, they're educated and talented to a certain point, as is any criminal. I mean, you need a certain level of, I would almost say, entrepreneurship in order to do any criminal level, right? But at the end of the day, they criminals will make mistakes eventually.
So the level of sophistication, and believe me, I'm no IT expert, but, you know, just logically thinking through how I could commit this crime. So I go on there and I do this wallet. Explain to us if it is possible, using what I said happened, is it possible to find out who has that wallet right now? Is it possible?
Okay. Let me start off by 5 years ago, 10 years ago, technology was incredibly new. Almost impossible for the average person, for the average detective to understand the blockchain. Now, let me directly answer your question right now. It's a totally different ballgame today. Today, you have brilliant men and women. The FBI, they are no mom and pop. They understand the blockchain network. As soon as they saw the importance a little while ago, they started putting their best men and women on this. Today, it's a lot harder to get away with these types of crimes. It's a lot. What do I mean by these types of crimes? I mean, ransomware. I mean, these types of kidnapping. When it gets up to this level, it's very, very difficult to find the perpetrators, but it's also very, very difficult to hide in a way that you will never get caught. Jen, it's like any other crime. There are crimes out there where there's one mistake that has cost somebody their freedom because they got caught. There are crimes out there where people just got incredibly lucky. We see no difference with the variables behind Bitcoin scamming, Bitcoin ransom. It's the same exact ecology. Did they make the right steps? Did they get lucky? Today, we can track blockchain transactions a lot easier than we could yesterday. People understand the math. They understand the algorithm. But it doesn't mean it's going to be done every single time.
So in this case, as far as, so right now, can you tell us why they deposited, why the FBI deposited $300 into that Bitcoin account, likely knowing nobody's going to take it out for $300. They had a different purpose. Why did the FBI put $300 in the ransom account?
That's a good question. And I wish I could get in the FBI's mind, as I'm sure that you did. I think that, are we sure that it was the FBI that put the money in? Because I see stories where somebody thinks it might have been anybody else. What do you think of that? You think it was the FBI?
You know what? You make a valid point. You make a valid point. We know it was put in there, but you're right. I should not jump to the assumption that it was the FBI. I'm going to tell you why I jumped to that assumption. And that is because I would have wanted to put some money in that wallet to make sure it was a legitimate account that could receive money. So as an FBI agent, this is like, that's what I would have done at the beginning as well, is just test it out with a certain amount of money just to make sure it worked. Sure. But you bring up a good point. It could have been any citizen, I suppose, that had that, but it's limited who has that number, right? We know probably a large amount of staff members at both of the local affiliates. Those people know. It just depends. You know, nobody can keep a secret. TMZ, right. Harvey Levin, Charles, who knows how much more of that staff know that number. Actually, what's interesting is when he first had it, he showed it. He had a piece of paper that he held up and you could see the numbers. I screenshotted it. But I thought it was a phone number. So clearly I don't have enough numbers, because now I know from seeing a real Bitcoin number how long it is. It's much longer than seven or eight numbers. So I think the problem is when he held that up, I could only see, when I screenshotted it, the first seven or so numbers or eight numbers, because I thought it went back to a phone and I traced the number to British Columbia. But now I know that it's a Bitcoin number. I didn't know that when he first came on. So I just screenshotted what he held up and you could see it through the piece of paper. And now they've gotten rid of that. You know, you can't see that. But right when he first came on, I did that. And I thought, well, why would somebody in British Columbia be doing this? So anyway, in other words, there would be a lot of people that could have put the 300 in. But to me, what makes the most sense is that the FBI would have done that just to verify that the wallet could accept money. Does that make any sense to you?
If we have a supposed Bitcoin wallet, it's easy to look on the blockchain to see if it's real.
Okay.
Now, I understand that the average person is going to test it and send money to make sure that it is a wallet. It does receive money. But you don't have to send money to know whether or not a wallet is actually accurate or real. Why would they do that? Like you said, somebody, whether it's somebody that in the FBI system or not, they want to confirm for a fact, okay, it can receive funds. Maybe they want to build trust with the kidnappers and say, hey, okay, I'm going to start sending you a little bit of money. Maybe they want to buy time. Maybe they want to see if they can get more information. These are different reasons, but my understanding, and you probably know better than I, the FBI has a strict no ransom policy that I think that they are very rigid with. They just refuse to give money. That's my understanding. And that would be the biggest reasons why they wouldn't give a test amount.
So that's interesting. And I think that's truly, truly a misnomer that everybody thinks, but you are 100% right in certain cases. In other words, if you look at the international cases that exist, have existed, currently are happening, where individuals are kidnapped, I could tell you there's hostage negotiators that are constantly on call down there. There was a huge period of time in the 1990s and even in the early 2000s where we had negotiators there all the time to handle all the individuals who were being taken for ransom. And in those cases, the Bureau isn't paying any money, but they would coordinate with the families for money to be paid. Why? And this is why I say that what happens in the States is sort of different from what happens internationally. Because when you're talking about cartel members that are doing those kidnappings, they are so reliable. They ask for $30,000, you pay it, you get your person back. You know, it's a business for them. So just like their drug, their sex trafficking businesses, their immigrant trafficking businesses, it's a business for them. And they realize in their business model, if they kidnap a U.S. citizen and they don't release them once they get their money, they're not going to be able to make that work ever again. So that is something that's functioned and that exists for real down there. And that's a fact. So that's why I say there are no ransom policy. And certainly that's what's understood. And the other thing is with the Bureau is they leave it up to the families. They will give the families their recommendations. In this case, I believe strongly that this, whoever sent this note, the abductors, they knew the FBI would not recommend paying a ransom when there's no proof of life or even proof of death later on, you know, when they said, we'll pay even if she's not with us, basically. And I think the FBI still said, yeah, but there's no proof of death either. There's no proof of anything. So we highly recommend if you want to keep your money and not lose it. But this is the main reason why I have you on, because my question is, can you're basically intimating that, listen, even who developed that wallet could possibly be traced, depending how sophisticated they were. Right now, they've been able to fool the FBI for 75 days, but as they continue to investigate and use subject matter experts in the industry, they still may be able to dig and figure that out. My question to you is, if they deposited, say, one Bitcoin or half a Bitcoin, in other words, sweeten the pot, let's say one Bitcoin for round number, 74,000, and somebody took that out on the other end, could that be traced? That's what I want to know.
There's a high possibility, yes. There's ways to hide the money. Money laundering, same thing in Bitcoin. It just doesn't happen with money. It happens in Bitcoin. There's methods. I think we have a graphic a little bit on. This is a perfect example here of what the Cali cartel did. Okay, this is a cartel. I believe they had a lot of their organizations in Spain. They hid their money. They were able to send it into legitimate businesses. They were able to deposit them in different accounts. They got away with it for a very long time. But obviously, after a while, law enforcement was able to trace him, but it took a long time. It didn't take a few days. That's what we're seeing here. Yes, you're right. If we deposit money and they move it, we can eventually get there. It's not guaranteed. Is it possible? Absolutely. The blockchain is public. And because the blockchain is public, we can see information. And not just the FBI, but you've got the whole of the internet, the whole of the public that would be interested to know what is that wallet address so that they can trace it. Ultimately, it's possible, just like we were able to, or not we, but law enforcement here was able to trace every penny behind the Cali cartel. Bitcoin has something similar. I think we have a graphic on the mixer.
Oh, sorry.
Here we go. No, that's all right. This is something that criminals are trying. They've gotten away with it, some of them. Nowadays, it's a lot harder to get away with this. There are programs, there are developers who are taking legitimate Bitcoin transactions and telling the bad guys, the bad actors, send me your Bitcoin, and for 1%, 2%, 3%, whatever the share is, I will clean the Bitcoin for you. So they put them inside these blockchains, inside these transactions, along with a lot of very good, legitimate people, and it comes out clean. They will, and that's the slide right before this. So maybe we should have, should have, my apologies, put this on second. There you go. They go through this elaborate transaction where they send this Bitcoin to different wallet addresses. And then it comes out clean. Now, FBI, a lot of law enforcements are getting wise to this. So instead of just accepting the transactions as is, they're watching this. They're reading this. What the bad guy counts on is being able to, on the other end, let's suppose I want to steal 10 Bitcoin. So I'll get 20 Bitcoin clean addresses that are not related to anything nefarious. Maybe they're legit. Maybe they come from an exchange. Maybe they come from a business, right? Like what we do here where we mine the Bitcoin and they go to valid addresses. We check all the addresses to make sure there's nothing funny going on. So then the 10 Bitcoins are divided here. They're sent to a bunch of transactions, a bunch of wallets is what I mean, a bunch of addresses move back and forth. They lose 1% here, 0.5% there. So at the end, maybe I get from the 10, they become 5 as an example. Okay, so now 10 aren't coming in and 5 aren't coming out, or 5 are coming out. So I'm looking for the 10. I'm not looking for the 5. And then those 5s are divided across the 10 different wallets. It makes it very difficult to trace. Okay, here's my original 10. Now those 10 are actually 5 because it cost this guy 50% of his Bitcoin to launder it. But valid organizations, exchanges, they watch these mixers now. They watch these applications. They watch these wallets and they trace these wallets. And they say, okay, these wallets were a part of something nefarious. And good companies, legal companies, won't use those wallets. They won't touch them. It's getting harder for the money launderer, for the Bitcoin launderer to get out to work. Those wallets are tainted. They were, now a bunch of good people are also going to be tainted on those wallets. And organizations like a Coinbase isn't going to give you the money for those wallets, for that Bitcoin. So I can't take it to the exchange and say, okay, now I have 5 Bitcoin, give me my cash. Those places will say, nah, it's dirty. Go do something else with that wallet. And by the way, that gets tagged every hop of the way.
See, this is, oh, go sorry. Ahead. No, go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. I thought you were done with that point. Sorry.
No. One more statement. This is just one way where law enforcement nowadays, it's a cat and mouse game. They're tagging those wallets. And in this case, if 6 million would go into a mixer, you can bet that when it comes out, every single one of those wallets will be looked at with a microscope.
See, that's this is my whole point right here. This graphic is my whole point in working organized crime for 10 years. I can tell you, we trace the money because it has to come out and you work backwards. It takes forever, but you can launder money all you want. You can launder it and it takes forever. But sooner or later, it comes out on several different ends and you work backwards. And that's how you can do it. And this is why I'm saying that that same could be done with Bitcoin. The same could be done in this case. It makes no sense to me not to prime this case and put money in that Bitcoin account, even if it's got to be so, it can't be $300. They're not going to risk all this for $300. But for $74,000, they might move it into various wallets. And are they even, I mean, let's really ask the question. Let me do it in the Bitcoin graph. Are they really this sophisticated? As we've all talked about, are they really this sophisticated, everyone? How many people are this sophisticated to be able to really launder this so it could never come out without any breadcrumb?
Well, there is another option, an option that changes the game. There are different coins, different, let me put it this way. I just went to Mexico. They used a peso. Okay. So I did the thing where you exchange it and you get the pesos for the dollars. Day to day, they use pesos. You have the lira, you have the euro. You have all these different currencies around the world. Same exact thing with crypto. Bitcoin's the big one, but there are other coins. So what a bad actor can do is they can change it from Bitcoin to a different type of coin. There's a coin called Monero. It by design, does not show you the graphic you see in front of you. It doesn't show you the hops. It keeps everything anonymous. Every single one of these would be question marks. And you're not going to know what comes out on the other end. Coins like Monero, another very popular one is called Zcash. These act like Bitcoin, but they don't show you a public blockchain. They can go into the ether and come out clean. That is a definite fear nowadays. That's a new system, newer system. Now, Monero's been around for a few years. People have questioned the security. People have questioned the authenticity, but they're becoming stronger. Zcash right now.
Go ahead.
Zcash is something that is being trusted more and more. Zcash, I can literally send you $10,000 and nobody will from one wallet to the other. A lot of people think that's the next Bitcoin. It acts just like Bitcoin. You're only ever going to have 21 million, just like Bitcoin. And it's got a higher level of privacy. So another variable that is somewhat newer, you can actually do what they call chain hopping. Turn it from Bitcoin into Monero, into Zcash, then transfer through wallets. Because it is designed to be private, there is no public blockchain. They can come out clean anywhere.
Okay, right now
is the biggest way. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
This is my problem with all of this. You want to be able to use it. Who cares if you've got all this crypto money, all this cyber money going from wallet to wallet to wallet? I know the one guy ended up getting a pizza for it. I know you said there's a hamburger place that will accept it now. And I know Bitcoin, that is, not Monero's and not Zcash. So you have all of this. So basically you're saying that you would have to be a very patient kidnapper that doesn't want to take, say, $70,000 and use it for a vacation or whatever other purpose?
So I wish I could put myself in the kidnapper's mind. But if I was a bad actor and I did something illegal, I wouldn't risk $74,000. I would risk a couple of million, definitely. Maybe we have an FBI psychologist or some kind of brilliant mind out there who knows this and who would say, we're going to have to give up a couple million, 3 million, 6 million in order for this actor to do something. And then can we trace it? If he keeps it in Bitcoin, yes. And by the way, I'm not telling you something that the criminals don't know. Mm-hmm. They understand this. And quite frankly, if they gave up that money, if they advised the family to give up that money, that would certainly encourage other bad actors to do the same. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the big reasons they don't want to do a Bitcoin or two Bitcoins, because it would do nothing but encourage more kidnappings and more ransom. However, If it stays on the Bitcoin network, it's traceable, just like you said on the Cali cartel. If they do other things, they have a higher probability of getting away with it.
So, of course, and that's the main reason why the FBI does not encourage paying any ransoms, right? It doesn't encourage it in the United States or in these cases, for sure. That is absolutely true. However, in this particular case, which, and I think they have so much more going on. I still think they'll solve this case within 6 months. Well, that's what I've said from the beginning. I'm sticking with it. I think it will be solved. But I just don't understand, and you might be right, would a kidnapper risk it for under that? But this wouldn't come from the money of the family. I'm not suggesting that. I want to make that crystal clear. There are huge case funds, hundreds of thousands of dollars of case funds that cases are allotted. We have it because you have to have it. You have to buy covert vehicles. You rent apartments. You have to have money for a case to work. So we have case funds for cases and we have case funds for informants. And it's a lot. And that's where I'm suggesting money come from. And I'm not suggesting it come from to encourage. Obviously, that is a big concern. You don't want to be like Mexico, where, good, let's start kidnapping people because actually the government will pay. But I'm talking about being able to solve this case with a paltry amount compared to the millions. We'll see at the end how much they've spent on this investigation, but it's going to be astronomical. How much they've spent, just like they spent on the Gabby Petito case. It was unbelievable when those numbers came out. And it's going to be similar here, possibly, depending on how long this goes on. I'm just saying, for that paltry amount to have a chance at catching them when maybe we might not catch them, is it worth all of that, right? Betting the come. Is it worth that maybe you won't catch them? Is it worth that maybe you'll encourage other kidnappers? Is it worth that?
Then, in my opinion, it is worth it. On a personal level, I think it's a good idea to put the money in, and you may have to wait, just like you said earlier. It may be years from now, but our government won't stop looking. And it, quite frankly, it might be the best way to catch them.
Yeah, and I think about this too. This was a case of a kidnapping that went wrong from the beginning, not to get too much in the weeds because I know you're on to give it, but there were so many mistakes earlier by the local department to do with the crime scene, to do with them stopping the search right away, not getting the FBI involved for a couple of days, all of that, the key window, 48 hours, that is not cliche. All of those mistakes, you would hope that in a normal kidnapping case, there was one that happened right up the road, when I say up the road, an hour and a half away in Scottsdale on January 31st. So a day before she was kidnapped, another kidnapping case occurred. Again, high value targets. They demanded $64 million in cryptocurrency. They got two knuckleheads, whoever was behind that, got two knuckleheads to come all the way from California who didn't even know one another. They gave them $1,000 seed money. And these people did this crime. But they're your normal knuckleheads that make so many mistakes, like you mentioned earlier, that they were caught. They were caught right away. They were caught in the middle of the crime. It was very vicious. They beat the people. Nevertheless, that's the normal what happens in kidnappings, at least that I've been involved with. It's kind of, they're quickly resolved. You know, this is
there is a misconception that Bitcoin crimes, crypto crime, anybody can get away with it. It's rampant. It's crazy. Bitcoin crypto is bad. But quite frankly, it's not as simple as that. The blockchain is public. We can find a heck of a lot of information, number one. Number two, let us not forget that the U.S. dollar has been used in 10,000 times more crime. It's the highest monetary tool in the world. It's much greater than any crypto has been, and it will continue to be because the U.S. government is so stable, so popular. Crypto may one day surpass it, but today, when people think of crypto, if they think of just the negative connotations, it's nothing but new technology. It's a cat and mouse game. The police are getting very, very good at this. I admire the FBI with their willingness to look at this complexity and get in the weeds and figure it out. Look, at the end of the day, there's my mother taught me when I was a little boy, the truth always comes out one way or the other. We may not know that truth, but somebody out there does. And quite frankly, my heart just hurts so much for the Guthrie family and what's going on. And to be honest with you, I would love to be able to stick in a couple of million there to see it start moving, to see what happens, and to trace it as far as we can go. It's got to eventually go somewhere. Something's got to break. But again, that's only one variable, the Bitcoin aspect, right? People talk, mistakes will be made. Maybe we'll find something in the future and be able to trace the forensics. But as for the crypto part, we can't look at it and say all crypto is evil. We can't look at it and say, oh, it can't ever be traced. Yes, it can be traced. I love your idea. I wish we would do it.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think for the reason you brought up, it will never be done because the Bureau doesn't want to be behind encouraging. But again, you know, this is the interesting piece of it. It's really up to the Guthrie family.
Yes.
At the end of the day, because the Bureau, they can use some case funds. They're not going to use millions of dollars of case funds. So at the end of the day, sadly, it really is on the plate of the Guthrie family, you know, and I'm sure they've had these conversations, you know, how important it is it to the Guthrie family to find the abductor, to find what I think will end up being what happened to their mom, as opposed to finding their mom. It's horrible. And I've also said this, I think that this is part of just my opinion, the terrorism that this abductor continues to do, because that's still looming out there. And then you have the other person that's coming on, you know, saying, listen, I didn't do it, but I know who did, and I know where she is, and I saw her live in Mexico. Obviously, that is, you know, it could be a Nigerian scam, whoever it is. That's the one I think that would take the bait of the 37,000. And for me, oh my gosh, that's worth it to me to try to trace. 37,000, the Bureau is spending that hand over fist in a day on this case. So even if it's not the main kidnappers, and then again, you worry about the extortionists, right? You set the precedent. But this is the one that's really mimicking how the other ransom notes are written, who they're written to. They haven't been able to be traced either. You know, so they have some sophistication about them. And they mimicked it right after, by the way. I believe it was on day 10, if I recall correctly, the day that Porch Guy's face came out. That's when they started, meaning the second set of notes, the extortionists, I'll call them. So there's the ransomers, and then there's the extortionists. And they want a half a Bitcoin. I don't know. I tickle the wire, but I've always been like that. And it's, you know, hard work and innovation often helped catch bad guys.
Absolutely.
You know, you have been amazing. I have taken up so much more of your time than I meant, but I want to give you the floor at the end of this to just say, is there anything else you want to impart on us? I'm so glad we made this connection. You're brilliant. And hopefully between your explanations and then me dumbing it down, we have a better understanding.
Well, I hope so too. I mean, my only thing that I want to kind of emphasize in is I'm praying for the Guthrie family. I feel absolutely horrible. Nobody should be going through this. I can only think of my own mother and what if that happened with my own mother? And it breaks my heart every time I see that picture and every time I see her. And I hope nothing but the best for them. And at the end of the day, I just, there's evil people out there. I mean, there's people that don't belong in society, and my heart just completely breaks. I do appreciate the opportunity. I'm very, very grateful. I've been in this wild ride of these last 4 or 5 years. I used to work in a traditional data center environment, and the CEO of this company, I think he did a very brilliant job when he said, hey, I want to bring in somebody from a traditional data center world to tame the wild, wild west of our crypto operations. So I'm very grateful where I'm at. And if there's anything I can help you with, Jen, give me a call.
Yeah, absolutely. Really quick, I forgot to get Janet's question answered. She says there's currently 20 million in Bitcoin and there'll only ever be 21. So why would people buy machines?
That's a very brilliant question. It's as simple as this. When Bitcoin started, the guy who started it designed it so that it would go for several years. And by several years, I mean well over 100 years. So what they do, the system, is every 4 years, it cuts off how much Bitcoin is produced. So as of today, we are at, I believe, 3.125 Bitcoin are produced every single time a blockchain is built. That number will go into the fractions. So I don't have the math in front of me, but let's suppose that in 2 or 3 years, the Bitcoins that are produced are literally going to be 0.00012345. Now, I do have a graphic. I don't know if we can pull up the price of a home, Jen, really quick to kind of why is that still going to have value? Well, back in 2016, the value of a home, the average home was about $288,000. So if I had 664 Bitcoin, I can sell those and buy the home. In 2020, the average median price of a home was $328,000. If I had 45 Bitcoin, I could buy that home. 2024, just 2 years ago, the average price of a home, $434,000. If I had 6.6 Bitcoins, the value of the Bitcoin has been growing substantially. So if I am going to, let me see if I can, I don't know if it's possible to share my screen. If I'm allowed, I have it there. So in a few years, when the output that the machines do is 0.00123456 Bitcoin, just imagine the value of the Bitcoin then. So today, if my machine gets some Bitcoin, if I have the right algorithm, I have about 200,000. Okay. The price of Bitcoin is going to grow exponentially. Just look at those numbers. Those numbers are just phenomenal. That's the future. That's real. That, by the way, that's the opposite of inflation. People want to know, why should I get into Bitcoin? My opinion, buy $100 worth of Bitcoin today. Open up a Coinbase account. Just leave it there. Because as you see, these values are real, by the way. It's only going to keep going up. Okay. My close friends and family, I tell them, invest $1,000, right? General public, they're not going to trust me. Fine. Put $100, leave it in the exchange. You could do the smart thing, put it in your own personal custody, your own wallet. But this is not something you just want to scoff at. It's going to be the transaction of the future. Just look at these numbers alone, tell you the entire story. What is this going to be in 4 years, 5 years? How many Bitcoin? The value of Bitcoin is going to keep going up. It's fluctuating today. We're in a four-year cycle. But to end my conversation, and I don't want to belabor the point, crypto is the future. And if all you do is put a little bit in it, so 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you have a very small nest egg, you're not going to regret it. I mean, think about it. If you would have invested, I kid you not, $50 into Apple when they first went public, just $50, today you'd have several hundred thousand dollars. Okay, so technology is the future. Those that don't adopt technology, you look at Blockbuster, they had a chance to buy Netflix, they didn't. Okay, you look at the cities that did not want to build highways next to them and they fought it, those cities don't exist anymore. Technology, growth, whether we like it or not, that's the future. And that's the future with money. And forgive me, I'm not trying to make this a Bitcoin commercial either, but it is what I live and breathe every day. I would advise you, I would advise your listeners, put some money into it. Don't give that information out to anybody. Don't save it. You use a savings account, because tomorrow you're going to thank yourself for doing it. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, really quickly, I want to say this. Sure. First of all, everyone, and I want to have you on screen when I say this. We spoke the day before. No, it was yesterday. We spoke yesterday for a pretty lengthy time. And I loved the heart of Mr. Vargas. I'm telling you, he is saying that he's not getting any money out of this. None. His heart for the Guthrie family. And you heard when I gave him the stage, he didn't talk about anything other than the Guthries. He's concerned. He wants to help. And he wanted to make it clear there is a path. Beyond that, when you look at his advice, I'm probably going to take it. $100, I spend that with just my husband and I when we go out to eat. Eating is so expensive now, I just can't even get over it. One time to the grocery store, it's $100 every single time. And I only have right now, well, I have four of us at home. It's so expensive just for one meal, because we do it kind of daily, right? Because I want everything to be fresh. I think it's great advice. And I know you're just doing it from your heart and what you believe in. It's kind of that betting the come. I'm probably going to do it. I'm going to put $100 in because I want to. This Absolutely. Is not a Bitcoin commercial, but I think he's just trying to pass on his knowledge. And you make two very interesting analogies about the highways going by that, you know, you don't want to lop onto. What was your other one I thought was really good?
Blockbuster had a chance to buy Netflix.
The reason I want to bring this up is the CEO of Blockbuster for Asia, so the one in charge of all of Asia, was our dear friend. Went to grade school, junior high school with my husband. Dear, dear friend. He started with Blockbuster in Wichita, Kansas, when it was Pop and Go Video, and then Blockbuster took over. Oh, yeah. It went very well until it didn't. Because as you said, and he says, you know, we didn't do what we needed to do. We thought it was always going to be people coming in buying VCH or whatever, just coming to the store and renting them. They never got with the program, and it is so hard to do because it goes against simplicity and what you know. And that's why Bitcoin, it seems so complicated, but I think when we broke it down, hopefully not using the Bitcoin terminology. And again, what we were trying to accomplish here is, can it be traced? Can putting money into that account give breadcrumbs? And it's very possible, but it would have to be a larger amount for somebody to take it. And they wouldn't, if they converted it to the Zcash or the Moneros, there could be serious problems. But you educated us. That I feel so educated, much more educated than I was on understanding this. And I just want to thank you again.
Thank you.
You guys, I really hope you enjoyed that show. I can think of nothing better than when you can come on a show and actually educate an audience and even help an audience. And for me, this was all about trying to understand, is there a path outside of the emails, outside of somebody recognizing Porch Guy, outside of the surveillance videos that the FBI is looking at, outside of all the interviews that were done, all the videos that they've got, meaning law enforcement, from the 11th and from the night of the 31st, can all of that, the DNA possibility, although I had an expert on with that, the original person who developed, if you will, was the first to use IgG in the criminal element, Dr. Fitzpatrick. And then we talked too with, and it's funny, he literally helped write the Mindhunter script. You got to look him up. Greg McCrary, who I've had on three times now, John Douglas's partner, one of the first in the behavioral, at that point it was called the Behavioral Science Unit, now the Behavioral Analysis Unit, had him on. He gave us over 2-3 hours of his time to go over. Look at his background. Look at what he did. He and John Douglas were the mind hunters from that show. You know, I'm always amazed. Again, he's one of my mentors. We work at the same place. Nevertheless, we've tried to touch on every aspect the Bureau would be working to solve who did this to Nancy Guthrie. But I have to tell you, this aspect absolutely blows my mind. It blows my mind because it leads me to believe that this individual or individuals, they are sophisticated. I know when we talked to Mr. Vargas, he said, well, you don't have to be that sophisticated to figure it out. But listen, you and I, we're all just on here listening to him. And to me, you have to be sophisticated to understand any of it. And these people have done something that has eluded the FBI for 75 days. Well, I'll say 72 days, because about 2.5 to 3 days were Pima County. They were on their own. And I realize the impact of the mistakes made early on that are now impacting the ability for this case to be solved. It does not go over my head. But nevertheless, you have somebody sophisticated enough to set up a Bitcoin wallet that hasn't been able to be traced yet. Somebody sophisticated enough that their emails, even though they sent 6 emails, that's 3 outlets, 2 emails each that haven't been traced, haven't been able to trace. It's also not getting past me that the other set of emails that came in, the extortionist emails, everyone, the extortionist emails also can't be traced. I mean, what does that tell us? This guy says he knows these guys and that, you know, yes, I believe it's an extortionist, but he's using the same modus operandi. He's reached out to the same outlets. He's asking for Bitcoin. You know, I mean, there's inroads here. Again, if it's my money, if I'm the case agent, I am literally going to my boss and begging him for that Bitcoin minimally to put into the account of the extortionist and or both, really both of them. I would just want to see if anybody grabs it. And maybe they are so sophisticated that they know, oh, geez, I just need to transfer it to a Monero or a Zcash wallet. And I'm sure the Bureau knows this. They're experts and the people they've contracted to say, listen, you're probably just going to lose the money. But how about the sophistication down the road? There's a chain. We talked all about the chain. There's going to be a chain from the out to somebody else. Maybe the Bureau believes that just the what was done to set up that wallet is enough. And maybe they don't need to tickle the wire because what they have is enough with just somebody setting up the Bitcoin account. Gives us a lot to think of or to think about. Again, I wanted somebody who really deals with this every day. I don't know. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I really appreciate it. I want to thank the mods. I want to thank you all. I know we've been on a long time. It's technical. I know some people were swimming in information. I thought he did a great job of breaking down something really complicated. Because if I could understand it, that's good, because I'm not technically very sophisticated. I don't know. I think this just tells us so much about who this person is from a profiling aspect. Tells us so much on how they have this figured out. Everyone, thank you again. I appreciate it. You guys have been amazing. Until next time, and let me get the right person up on the stage. Sorry. Nancy Guthrie. Horrible what happened to her. Horrible what happened to this family. Horrible the decisions they've had to make. It's in the FBI's hands now, and I hope they're able to figure this out. There's a lot of different streams. I just think this can't be overlooked as being one of them. Thanks for being here, everyone. May justice be served for the justice or for the Guthrie family and for all the missing.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.